Yashodanandana Braja Janaranjana Yamuna Tira Vanashahari Yamuna Tira Vanashahari Jaya Rasa Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Rasa Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Gopijana Vallabha Giri Varadhari Jaya Gopijana Vallabha Giri Varadhari Yashodanandana Braja Janaranjana Yashodanandana Braja Janaranjana Yamuna Tira Vanashahari Yamuna Tira Vanashahari Jaya Rasa Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Rasa Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Om Vishnu Pad Paramahansa Parivraja Kacharya Ashtotarastra Shri Shimad Esi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai Karantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Nitae Gaur Premanande Hri Vibho Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Ah, Guru Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 3, The Birth of Lord Krishna, Text Number 22 Word meanings, I am, this rascal, two, but, asubhya, who is not civilized at all. Asura means uncivilized, and sura means civilized. Tava, of your lordship, janma, the birth, now, our, grihe, into the home, shrutva, after hearing, agrajan, te, all the brothers born before you. Nyavatit, killed, Sura Ishwara, O Lord of the Suras, the civilized persons, Saha, he, that uncivilized Kamsa, Te, your, Avataram, appearance, Purushai, by his lieutenants, Samarpitam, being informed of, Shutta, After hearing, Atuna, now, Eva, indeed, Apisarati, will come immediately, Udayudha, with raised weapons. Ayam tusabhya stava janmana grihe. Shrutagrajang ste nyavadhit sureshwara. Satevataram purushai samarpitam. Shrutva dunai vabhisarat yudhayudha. Ayam tu sabhyas tava janmana grihe. Sutragra jangste nyavadhit sureshwara. Satevataram purushai samarpitam. Shrutva dunai vabhisarat yudhayudha. Ayam tu sabhyas tava janmana grihe. Sutva grajangste nyavadhit sureshwara. Satevataram purushai samarpitam. Sutva dunai vabhisarat yudhayudha. Ayam tu sabhyas tava janmana grihe. Shrutva grajangste nyavadhit sureshwara. Satevataram purushai samarpitam. Shrutva dunai vabhisarat yudhayudha. Ayam tu sabhyas tava janmana grihe. Shrutva grajangste nyavadhit sureshwara. Satevataram purushai samarpitam. Shrutva dunai vabhisarat yudhayudha. Sabhyastava janmana grihe. Shrutva grajangste nyavadhit sureshwara. Satevataram purushai samarpitam. Shrutva dunai vabhisarat yudhayudha.
Ladies.
Ayam tu sabhyas tava janmana grihe. Shrutva grajangste nyavadhit sureshwara. Satevataram purushai samarpitam. Shrutva dunai vabhisarat.
Everyone's afraid of that long word at the last line. Translation: O my Lord, Lord of the demigods, after hearing the prophecy that you would take birth in our home and kill him, this uncivilized Kamsa killed so many of your elder brothers. As soon as he hears from his lieutenants that you have appeared, he will immediately come with weapons to kill you. Now, Prabhupada's going to let him have it here in this purport. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Kamsa has here been described as asubhya, meaning uncivilized or most heinous, because he killed the many children of his sister. When he heard the prophecy that he would be killed by her eighth son, this uncivilized man, Kamsa, was immediately ready to kill his innocent sister on the occasion of her marriage. An uncivilized man can do anything for the satisfaction of his senses. He can kill children, he can kill cows, he can kill brahmanas, he can kill old men. He has no mercy for anyone. According to the Vedic civilization, cows, women, children, old men, and brahmanas should be excused if they are at fault. But asuras, uncivilized men, do not care about that. At the present moment, the killing of cows and the killing of children is going on unrestrictedly. And therefore, this civilization is not at all human. And those who are conducting this condemned civilization are uncivilized asuras. In case you had any doubt, who you're going to vote for next time. Such uncivilized men are not in favor of the Krishna consciousness movement. As public officers, they declare without hesitation that the chanting of the Hare Krishna movement is a nuisance. Although Bhagavad Gita clearly says, Satatam kirtayanto mam yatantascha dridhavrata. According to this verse, it is the duty of the Mahatmas to chant the Hare Krishna mantra and try to spread it all over the world to the best of their ability. Unfortunately, society is in such an uncivilized state that there are so-called Mahatmas who are prepared to kill cows and children and stop the Hare Krishna movement. Such uncivilized activities were actually demonstrated in opposition to the Hare Krishna movement's Bombay center, Hare Krishna Land. As Kamsa was not expected to kill the beautiful child of Devaki and Vasudev, the uncivilized society, although unhappy about the advancement of the Krishna consciousness movement, cannot be expected to stop it. Yet we must face many difficulties in many different ways. Although Krishna cannot be killed, Vasudev, as the father of Krishna, was trembling because in affection he thought that Kamsa would immediately come and kill his son. Similarly, although the Krishna consciousness movement and Krishna are not different, and no asuras can check it, we are afraid that at any moment the asuras can stop this movement in any part of the world. Om Jnana Timirantasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitamena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Ayam tu sabhyastava janma nao grihe shutagrijangs te nyavatit sureshwara satevataram purushai samarpitam shutvadunhai va pisarat yutayuta. O my Lord, Lord of the demigods, after hearing the prophecy that you would take birth in our home and kill him, this uncivilized Kamsa killed so many of your elder brothers. As soon as he hears from his lieutenants that you have appeared, he will immediately come with weapons to kill you. First, I wanted to mention a few words in the Sanskrit that I thought were interesting. First, Vasudev calls Kamsa asubhya. So we know often that when comes before something, it means not. So subhya means members of a exalted assembly, sabha, you know the word sabha, Raj Sabha, the assembly of the king. So sabhya means that the assembly, the people gathered there. So sabhya especially means qualified persons in an assembly, persons who belong to an assembly or a group of qualified, civilized persons. So asabhya means Kamsa's not in that category, even though he's the king, should be in that category. He's not. And Prabhupada, it's interesting how when he does the word for word, he says, asubhya, who is not civilized at all. And then he says, asura means uncivilized, and sura means civilized. So I thought, well, why is Prabhupada talking about asura and sura when the word is asubhya? But But later in the verse, Krishna is called Sureshwara. So that might be a hint why Prabhupada thought he mentioned what Sura is. Krishna is Sureshwara. Sura, or Asura, you can say is a synonym for Asabhya. So Krishna is not he's the Ishwara of everyone, of course, but he's especially the Ishwara, or the Lord, of the Suras. Of course, in the translation, Prabhupada translates that as the demigods, Suras and Asuras. We know they're from the cosmic perspective, we have the Suras and the Asuras, the demigods and the demons who are always fighting. But we can also take the word in a more general way. Suras means devotees of Krishna. Vishnu Bhakta. They're also called Devas. Vishnu Bhakta Smito Daiva. Asuras Tad Viparya. And the Asuras are the opposite, those who are always against Krishna. So another thing I thought was interesting was the mention of the brothers of Krishna. I was thinking, I don't usually think of it that way. The sons of Devaki who were killed, they were actually Krishna's brothers. Agrajan means they were born before. Those who were born before you, Agrajan, Ja means born, and Agra means before. In fact, Krishna has a name that has this in it, Gadagraja. We have our Gadagraja Das here. So the meaning of this word is one who was born before. He's the elder brother of Gada. His name is Gada. Gada is one of the sons of one of the queens of co-wives of Devaki. Vasudeva had 18 wives, I think it is. Yeah, just looked it up. 18 in one place, it says 18. Well, he had 18 wives. One of his wives, I'm forgetting her name right now. Anyway, one of her sons is named Gada. So Krishna is called Gadagraja. Of course, this name of Krishna also appears in another place. Prabhupada doesn't translate it that way. Shravid Varaha Hoshta Karai, which is, of course, relevant to this verse we're reading today. Some of you may be familiar with this verse. Shravid Varaha Hoshta Karai, Sangstuta Purusha Pashu, Nayakarna Patopeta, Jatu Nama Gadagraja. This verse begins, comes early in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And it says that those men who are like dogs, hogs, camels, and asses, they glorify those who never hear of Krishna, actually. Nayakarna Patopeta. It's nice the way it's described there. Those for whom Krishna's name never enters into the pathway of their ears. Karnapata, the path of the ears. Krishna there is specifically called Gadagraja. Prabhupada translates it there as a deliverer from evils. I'm not sure how he gets that from that Gada. Of course, Gada, we know Gada means club also. So maybe there's some connection there. I was noticing this morning how Balaram has a big club today on his shoulder. He's got his hand on Krishna's shoulder, his arm, but also in the same arm he has a club there, ready for action. So Krishna's Gadadhara, of course, one who carries the club, Gadadhara. So this verse, Shravid Varaha Hoshta Karai, certainly is relevant today. Srila Prabhupada says at the end of the first the paragraph of this purport, says those who are conducting this condemned civilization are uncivilized asuras. So he especially tends to go after the leaders of the society. In this verse, Shravid Varaha Hoshta Karai, it says that the leaders are glorified by those who are like dogs, hogs, camels, and asses. Whereas in the purport to that verse, Prabhupada, he describes why these particular animals are selected here. This is Shonaka Rishi, I think, who speaks that verse. So he says, the dog, what does Prabhupada say about the dog? Why does Krishna select the dog? Because the dog is like, people go and they get big education and they have big degrees. And then when they have their big degrees and they have to go begging door to door with their scroll in the mouth, they go door to door begging for work. Because in civilized society, you don't have to beg for work. Everyone has their occupation, especially the educated persons, the brahmanas. They don't have to work for anyone. They're independent in that way, so they don't owe anything to anyone. So the poor, even the educated persons in this age, they're like dogs having to beg. Of course, it's getting worse and worse. It's a big anxiety for college students these days. It used to be, you're all set, you get your college degree, you didn't have to worry about anything. Now they're starting to worry. Early on in their college careers, they're out looking around, trying to find a job before they even have that diploma in hand or in mouth. They're looking for work because they don't know if it's going to be available. So that's the condition of the ordinary people, ordinary society, people who are like dogs. Hogs, of course, hogs mean they'll eat anything. Today's a good example of that. This is Turkey Day. Dhiradatta just mentioned to me that the president pardoned two turkeys. I think that's something he does every year, gives executive pardon to two turkeys. How nice, huh? Two out of a billion or whatever it is are going to be slaughtered today. I told him there's a few Turkey politicians that need pardoning too. But there's a lot of... So anyway, it's horrendous actually. Millions and millions are slaughtered. That's how they celebrate. That's how they give thanks, by slaughtering God's creatures. So the hog especially will eat anything. And no discrimination. That's one of the characteristics of life in material existence. Material existence, as Narottam Das Thakur, he says, you take birth among different species where you have to eat abominable things. I'm always seeing vultures whenever I drive back and forth to the temple. Just a couple days ago, there were two deer. I think sometimes people kill them and they just throw them beside the road. So then the vultures come and clean up, have a big feast. There were about 20 of them there. I had to honk my horn so feel like an Alfred Hitchcock movie when I drive by. Big, huge things. So they love it. That's their food. It's great to them. But a civilized person thinks, oh, how disgusting that is. But what's the difference? You're pecking away at a deer, or you're pecking away at a... All you've done, you eat your beef or your turkey, or what, all you've done is added some heat to it. That's all you've done. It's the same principle. So that's the hog mentality. Just eat anything. Of course, sense enjoyers in general, we know Rishabhdev describes them as stool-eating hogs. The hog is getting his enjoyment from the stool, and we're getting our enjoyment from something else. Material, anything in material life, it's the same thing. Shravidvaraha ushtra. Ushtra means the camel. Dogs, hogs, camels, and asses. So the camel... Of course, that graphic example of the camel is given. He eats the thorns, and then his tongue bleeds, and he likes the blood mixed in it. So Prabhupada compared this to sex. We enjoy sex, and we're losing our lives as a result. He also compared, he says this is like the big business magnates or industrialists who are eating their blood along with their heart activity. Of course, they're also bleeding other people. Another thing, exploiting other people. So they also fit in that category. And finally, the ass, the donkey, is considered just stupid, mudha. They will eat, they can eat anywhere, but they're driven. That example, a carrot is stuck in front of their nose on the end of a stick, and they're always going after the carrot. And they can turn either way and get some grass to eat. But they think, no, I have to work hard, I have to work hard. So this is the ass mentality, the mentality of the fruitive worker. So this is the qualification of the people. This is the people in a democracy who are electing the leaders. So Prabhupada said, the leaders may be very proud that all these people are glorifying us. But who are they? Dogs, hogs, camels, and asses. Does that make you great? If the donkey is braying at you, hee-haw, hee-haw, hee-haw. We have a donkey that's down the street from us. I hear it all the time. It always reminds me of this. So there, that's your... You think it's so great, they're glorifying you, but it's the same thing. So this is the civilization that Prabhupada is condemning here. And he says, in such a civilization, they consider us a nuisance. as Prabhupada would say, nuisance. This example Prabhupada gives, as some of you may remember, when as he mentions here, that people complained that we were creating a nuisance. So there was a particular example. He mentions Hare Krishna land in Bombay. So the neighbors were complaining that the devotees were chanting and creating a nuisance. And the police complained to us. So many times Prabhupada brought this up in conversations and lectures. He said, now they think it is nuisance that we're chanting Hare Krishna. In fact, the way Prabhupada states it here, no, it's given in Bhagavad Gita. How can you say it's a nuisance? Krishna is telling us to do it, and now you're saying it's a nuisance? What kind of thinking is this? For us, what Krishna says, that's what we do. That makes it right. Obviously, absolutely right. Whatever Krishna tells us to do, we have to do it. In fact, we say it like that. Of course, we can put it in modern language. We say it's our religious duty that we have to do this. Of course, we don't have to be obnoxious about it, but we do have to chant. I may have told this story before. When I became a devotee, I was in the Air Force, and I wanted to get out because I still had some commitment. I had gone to the Air Force Academy, and I was supposed to serve 5 years, and I had only served about a year. But I really wanted to get out and move into the temple. So I started wearing my neck beads to work with my uniform. And they said, you can't do that. It's against regulations. And then I told them, I said, I have to. It's my religion. And they have to show. So I stretched it a little bit. And I even went to I had to go to the legal office and the psychiatrist and the chaplains, different people. So I went to the legal department. I showed them. I said, you know, this is our law book. I brought the Nectar of Devotion. And I said, see, it shows right here that if you wear these, the Yamadutas, the agents of death, you'll be protected from them. So I have to wear them so I don't get... So it's my religious duty. I have to do it. Actually, that's actually what led to my getting... I got an honorable discharge because I told them I couldn't take them off and they wouldn't let me come to work in my uniform. So that was it. So in any case, we have our religious duties. We have to do. So it can't be a nuisance. That's what Krishna says. Lord Chaitanya says, Yari deka tarikaha Krishna upadesh. We have to spread Krishna consciousness everywhere. Of course, Lord Chaitanya predicted that the Hare Krishna movement would go everywhere. So we have to do our best to make that happen. Priti vityayati yata nagaradi gram sarvatra patraya haibe mornam. This verse, I just discovered this yesterday. I never knew this before. This is not actually the verse. It's Prabhupada's paraphrasing of the verse. But the Bhagavad Gita chants it that way. But I looked at it, according to the Veda base, it's Ancha Lila of the Chaitanya Bhagavat, Ancha Kanda of Chaitanya Bhagavat, and the verse is Prithivi Paryanta Yata Ache Deshagram Sarvata Sanchar Haibeka Moranam, which means the same thing. The Prabhupada had his particular way of course he's Bengali, so he can he paraphrased Sanskrit sometimes too. So this verse, Lord Chaitanya is saying, spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, or my name will be spread all over the world. So here, of course, Prabhupada, then he ends this purport talking about this interesting idea here about how Vasudeva, Krishna has appeared to him with four-armed Vishnu form. He knows he's God. He's offering prayers to him. We heard these exalted prayers, how everything comes from you, you're above the three modes of the material nature, you're the supreme controller, all of these things. You're beyond the Mahatattva and so on. So all these grandiose prayers and glorification of God. Then at the same time he's thinking, uh-oh, Kamsa's going to come and kill you. So he has both of these ideas going on in his mind. So Prabhupada, in his genius, he relates it to his own way of thinking, or the devotee's way of thinking. The Krishna consciousness movement, he says, is Krishna. The Sankirtan, Krishna Kirtan is Krishna. There's no difference. They're identical. So the Hare Krishna movement is Krishna. Or another way to look at it, as Prabhupada said, ISKCON is a branch of the Chaitanya tree. So a branch of the tree is the same as the tree. So it cannot be killed. It cannot be destroyed. But at the same time, we're always in anxiety, worrying, oh, maybe someone will come and stop this movement. So this is the mood of the devotee. I was thinking how we saw this in Srila Prabhupada, how he was very careful to, in his own actions. He illustrated this in his own life, how he acted to protect his movement. From the early days of even on 26 Second Avenue, I was trying to think of the exact example, but I have some idea in mind how Prabhupada was so strict about following the regulations. I think somebody was smoking marijuana or something. He said, no, you cannot stay with us. As I remember, I think in the Lilamrita, there's some commentary given that so Prabhupada was protecting his child. He had to act very strong because this was his child. He was nurturing. He had brought this, given birth to this child, ISKCON, in the West, and he had to protect this child. And how would he protect it? By making sure that the rules and regulations were followed very carefully. And of course, Prabhupada said this movement cannot be destroyed from without, it can only be destroyed from within. So the demons can't destroy us, but we can destroy ourselves if we don't follow Srila Prabhupada's instructions. So wherein this verse, of course, can give us hope, because even though we live in this horrible time, we're living in this ocean of faults, there's danger everywhere. In fact, we become accustomed to it, but it's actually quite degraded, as Srila Prabhupada points out here. But still, Krishna consciousness movement will go on because it's the prophecy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and the demons can't destroy it. Ultimately, Krishna's side wins. Jayatas, how does that go? Jayatas Pandu Putranam Yesham Pakshe Janardana. Victory is always on the side of the Pandus, because they're under the protection of Krishna. Pakshe means under the wing. Paksha means a bird. So like a little baby bird under the wing. So the devotee is always under the wing, under the protection of Krishna. And of course the Krishna consciousness movement, therefore, is also always protected by Krishna and will be successful. So the translation again. O my Lord, Lord of the demigods, after hearing the prophecy that you would take birth in our home and kill him, this uncivilized Kamsa killed so many of your elder brothers. As soon as he hears from his lieutenants that you have appeared, he will immediately come with weapons to kill you. Any questions or comments? So many hands. I'm going to look at the ladies' side first, because I always miss them over there. Anybody? Madam Mati's not here. She usually has questions. She comes up at the end. You didn't look at the ladies. So I'm looking. Okay, we'll start over here. Dravida Prabhu?
I had one quick comment and then a question. Is that okay?
Yeah.
The thing about that verse, Pratipityachi at the Nagavati Gram, if you check the other Veda base, we call it Charya base, you'll find that all the writings, you know, Srila Swami, they all quote it that way. So my conclusion was that this is the way that Bhaktisiddhanta would chant it, and they all picked it up from that. With this particular one, although Prabhupada does do that, I don't think he himself...
They picked it up from whom?
Bhaktisiddhanta.
Bhaktisiddhanta.
This is the way he was always chanting.
Uh-huh.
So he picked it up.
So he paraphrased it first.
Yeah, I mean, just reworded it, yeah. The question I have is about how the movement can't be killed. And of course, you're right, because Krishna can't be killed. But I'm thinking how, after Lord Chaitanya left the planet, the movement, you know, he started the movement, but it was kind of eclipsed for hundreds of years until Bhaktivinoda Bhaktisiddhanta and Srila Prabhupada. So do we have any kind of conception that that might happen again?
Yeah.
I mean, if we...
Well, I think that's true. That can definitely happen. There can be, just like when you're in a fight, sometimes you get knocked down. So when we get we may suffer some blows. Lord Chaitanya's movement may. Yeah, and even historically, there are periods when Vaishnavism is very down, hardly existent at all. But still, the prediction is there that for 10,000 years, Lord Chaitanya's movement will be prominent. That's the word Prabhupada used. Lord Chaitanya's movement will be prominent for the next 10,000 years. So there may be ups and downs, but the general movement is going to be forward. And, of course, that's Lord Chaitanya's prediction.
Lord Chaitanya came himself, and he said that he was delivering everybody in the universe when he came, which is something I'm not quite sure how that works, but that's what Lord Chaitanya said. So that certainly that's his movement, and he got started the process for that to happen. So yeah, we can, and of course that makes the fear that could happen, that things could disappear for some time until they reappear, should make us feel that we have to make sure that it's very, very solid, that everything goes on very solid. Of course, Prabhupada's books are there. We know Prabhupada himself, when he left, he said, "I feel secure," basically, because the books are there. The foundation has already been established. There's a solid foundation. Certainly, Prabhupada's instructions form a very solid foundation. So when you have a solid foundation, then you can be more hopeful that things will progress smoothly into the future. Pushkar? Bajra, go ahead. Let's get the Bajra.
About Bombay Temple, this is nice to hear that Srila Prabhupada, before even he came to the state in 65, he had a 3 volumes of Srimad Bhagavatam, but
can you speak a little louder and move the microphone a little farther away? It's too muffled, I can't hear very clearly.
And is it okay now? And the 3rd volume was sponsored by Srimati Murarji. And Srimati Murarji would ask Srila Prabhupada to come to her place, and Srila Prabhupada would read that Srimad Bhagavatam. So he had to go through Srimati Murarji.
No, you must have. You turned it off. Yeah, you turned it off. No, not working. So I'm not sure I'm hearing correctly. You said the 3rd temple was Srimati Murarji's house. Is that what you said?
Third volume of the Srimad Bhagavatam was sponsored by Srimati Murarji.
The 3rd volume of the Bhagavatam. Oh, yes, okay.
And Srila Prabhupada had to go to read that Srimad Bhagavatam to Srimati Murarji, and Srimati Murarji had the building right on that Juhu Beach. So Srila Prabhupada had to go to the land, which is the temple right now.
Oh.
So every time he was going by, he would think that this is the place to build a temple.
And that was really out in the middle of nowhere at that time, too, right?
No, it was a big forest. People were passing a stool there.
And the boondocks.
Yeah. So, to see that whatever, even before he came here, he had that in mind.
Yeah.
To build that temple there. Srila Krishna fulfilled his promise. And then not just that, but when the deities were in the shack and they had installed, at that time Srila Prabhupada saying, that I'm talking to Krishna, and let Krishna now is in your hand to build this temple. I'm poor, I have nothing. So he had given to Krishna to build this temple.
Pushkar, you don't have any more?
Yeah, when you see the word nuisance, you immediately triggers your mind that whole thing, because India probably was particularly irked that Indians would come up with this idea, nuisance. West, if they say that's expected, but in India, it would particularly bug them. And I was thinking, it reminded me of the news conference in 76 in Delhi, where the challenging, there was some, hear the tape and the recording, they're challenging with Swamiji, so many things. And after a while, they were rather young sounding people, and they began to respect Prabhupada more. And they were saying, well, why Swamiji, if India has to suffer because we, we're supposed to be pious, but in the West they're all enjoying, very kind of, they don't know much about anything. And Prabhupada said, you should suffer 10 times more because Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Ramchandra, they all appear on your land and you have rejected now. And he started quoting Anath Bhavanti Bhutani. So Prabhupada used to particularly bug him, we could say, that the Indians would come up with something like nuisance. So when you see that word, it's like a seed being, you immediately know that when he talks about the government, he's particularly pinpointing the Indian government, although the rest of them are obviously demoniac. But you won't shouldn't expect that in India. You expect that they would, you know, be a notch higher or something.
Yeah, they would welcome it. So even in a culture of kirtan, they would find it a nuisance now in modern age.
And this, you would swathe it about a host of crowds thinking that these words are expanded like Krishna's Kaviraj uses that abhakta ustre ahoy na pravesh, that the camel-like non-devotees, they cannot enter into these pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. I'm getting a secret jubilation out of that. <I'm> not, it's kind of funny because he's not condemning, he's praying that everyone will say, bring their mind to the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, but if they don't anyway, then they're condemned by their own camel-like mentality.
Hmm. Prabhu, you had something?
Regarding he may face difficulties or Vaishnavism may diminish, but then Lord Chaitanya's prediction was my name will be chanted in every town and village. Now, we see that at least with the new generation, and also because of economics, financial situations, the deity worships at a lot of centers may not be that opulent. However, with the new generation, you see that they're more into Sankirtan and all that. But is it right to assume that that arm of the movement, which Lord Chaitanya predicted, my name will be chanted in every town and village, probably Sankirtan will spread, and it is not very costly for that part of the movement to spread as opposed to the establishments of temples and deity worship, you know, which requires a lot of Lakshmi manpower and commitment.
Yeah, the movement ultimately is not dependent on that. In fact, Prabhupada, when he was building the temple in Mayapur, he said, you know, I can sit anywhere and chant Hare Krishna, but he was talking to a businessman, he said, but you won't come. If Bhaktivedanta Swami is sitting under a tree, who will come? You won't come. So that's why we build temples for other people to come. But for devotees, we can chant Hare Krishna anywhere. Of course, then it becomes a temple. Of course, any place where devotees congregate, that's a temple. But you're right, there may be certain challenges, like financial challenges, where we can't worship Krishna with the kind of opulence that we like to do in deity worship. But the kirtan can always go on in any situation. Rungavati?
Bombay at the time when there was a shack, and we used to have Guru Puja, and Prabhupada would come outside. If you see that one sort of orange chair, like looks like a big living room chair, something like a wingback, that was in Bombay Temple. And even though it was a very, very humble temple, it was wonderful. It was absolutely wonderful. And we would chant outside, and it was a temple. The deities were there. And from the very beginning, even though it was fraught with so many difficulties, with Mr. Nair, and then later on there was that unfortunate incident that took place over the shoes, and it had its tremendous difficulties, but it was Prabhupada's vision, and so nice to know that it came about, and Giriraj Swami and so many others just worked tirelessly, day in and day out, night and day, preaching, going back and forth into town. And it's just a tremendous tribute to Srila Prabhupada and his such dedicated devotees that brought that temple to life to where it is today. And I'm thankful for that on this Thanksgiving Day.
Thank you. So we'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.